You're syncing up and tuning in to the Lending Link podcast, powered by GDS Link, where the modern day lender can dive deeper into the future of data, decisioning, and credit risk solutions.
Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm your host, Rich Altman, and today we're syncing up with Adam Guller. Adam is the Executive Vice President of FinTech Banking at Cross River Bank, where he has worked for over 16 years. Adam is responsible for all third-party partnerships for Cross River's FinTech Banking products. Previously at Cross River, Adam held the role of Chief Credit Officer for his first 12 years and was responsible for the launch and expansion of Cross River's successful marketplace lending program. Adam joined Cross River at its inception in 2008 and is a member of the bank's executive team. Prior to joining Cross River, Adam held positions at Fitch Ratings as an associate director and as director of underwriting at First Meridian Mortgage. Adam holds an MBA from Touro College and a Bachelor of Science from Yeshiva University, both in New York City. In this episode, Adam and I will be discussing the role that Cross River Bank fills in the fintech marketplace lending industry, some trends in this industry, and so much more. But before we dive into the interview, please head over to our LinkedIn and Twitter pages at GDS Link, that's G-D-S-L-I-N-K, and hit those like and follow buttons. If you have not done so already, please subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you prefer to listen to your podcast. All right, now let's get synced with GDS Link. Welcome, Adam. I hope you have a great week so far. Where are you joining us from?
Rich, thanks so much. Great to be here. I'm joining you from the Cross River headquarters in Fort Lee, New Jersey.
Thank you for returning as a guest of the Lending Link for take two of the podcast you and I did in Las Vegas on March 4th at FinTech Meetup. As you know, we experienced some technical issues, but it worked out since we now have more time to meet with each other. Before we discuss business, let's get a bit personal. It was shared with me that you enjoy running and ice cream. Have you ever participated in the New York City Marathon?
I have. I've actually ran three New York City Marathons as recently as last year. It just might be my last, but we'll see what happens in the future. So I do continue to run. I do a half marathon every Sunday, and I run about four times a week.
Wow, that's pretty intense. Any opportunities for marathons outside the U.S. that you're looking at?
I've done a whole bunch of races, half marathons and team relays in other parts of the country and other parts of the U.S. Never been done anything internationally. I think if I would pick one that I really want to do, it's probably the Jerusalem Marathon. It's a little bit more challenging and there's a lot more elevation. And I think some of the ground services are harder, but I think I would definitely want to do that at one point in my life.
Well, good luck. And so what's your favorite flavor for ice cream?
So it's got to be cookie dough. So ice cream sort of is my cheating habit when I want to go off my relatively healthy diet. Every Tuesday, they have this ice cream score locally where they have buy one, get one free. And so every Tuesday, I go in like a little kid and buy four of them and use that to, for work from home days or from weekends. And so I always have a stock of ice cream in the freezer.
Well, there you go. With all that running you do, I assume you can eat as much ice cream as you want.
Hope. We'll see.
Okay. Well, let's get started, Adam. Can you give a little history on Cross River Bank and, how it got started and how it's evolved into where it is today?
Absolutely. It's a fascinating story. Really, back in 2008, after the big crisis post the mortgage debacle, we had an idea. We had a banking charter and had an idea to be able to lend when other banks weren't lending. So at the time, the focus was on being a traditional commercial bank. And we realized very quickly that to scale and to grow to where we wanted it to be, would be inefficient to go direct to customer. Mm-hmm. So we partnered with companies like Green Sky and others and realized that we could leverage our banking charter to offer products through others where they could acquire the customer. And so we then used that experience, built some technology, and then started building these partnership models. We started in lending, evolved to payments, and then cards and deposits as well. And so if you fast forward to today, what we have is a holistic model built on technology. We can enable any banking product that you want to offer to consumers and small businesses alike.
Okay, good, good. Well, thanks for that. So maybe just dig a little more deeply into, your role as heading up bank products. What is that day-to-day life of Adam? What's that look like?
Yeah. Early on, as a bank that started with five people, you wear a lot of different hats. And so I did that as well, and we all did. And so what started out as a responsibility for credit and products and sales, really at some point had to be bifurcated. So ultimately, my role today is to run fintech banking. What that means is that I have to oversee the sales, the onboarding, the growth, the business risk, and all the relationship management for all our third-party partnerships across products.
Okay, good, good. I went out to Wikipedia and I looked up Cross River Bank. It's always interesting to see how it's defined, one of the companies that I'm talking to. And I'm just going to quote it. Cross River is an American financial services organization that provides technology infrastructure to fintech and technology companies. Based in Fort Lee, New Jersey, where you are today, it serves its clients with embedded payments, cards, lending, and cryptocurrency solutions as an FDIC-insured member. Cross River is noted for its embrace of the trend in the financial services sector towards API-based payment platform services. So, you know, what struck me is given that Cross River is a bank, it's interesting that the definition, I feel it almost seems to lean more heavily into the tech side versus the bank side. So, now, would you say you're a technology company married to a bank or a bank married to a technology company?
That's a great question. What we like to really say is that we are powered by technology at our core. We truly are a tech company. We happen to also have a banking license and a banking charter. But truthfully, what we really can say, we're actually empowering others through our technology to facilitate products using that technology.
Mm-hmm. Okay. On your website, it says that you provide technology infrastructure. In this regard, have you developed your own technology to support the various products you offer, or have you partnered with technology firms to bring their solutions to your clients?
It's a really important point you bring up, one that we're really passionate about. So I think what we're seeing today is that the idea of using third-party middleware providers is frowned on, I think, not only by the folks that they support, but also by the regulators. And I think what's really important to distinguish us is that we built our own technology, essentially our own core, which powers all of our products. So when you work with Cross River, you're not only getting the ability to license your product as a bank, but you're also getting the ability to license and leverage our technology for offering those products. And the great part is when you build it yourself, you're not reliant on a third party to make changes, and we're able to create a lot more interoperability to facilitate products. So we're able to do things that are more unique because of that interoperability.
Got it. Okay, Cross River has a relationship with several fintechs, and you mentioned GreenSky, that have built platforms to attract and onboard consumers who are looking to secure a financial product, such as, for example, an unsecured personal loan. In these relationships, Cross River is considered the partner bank of these fintechs. While I suspect a large percent of our listeners are familiar with the bank partnership model, for the benefit of our audience who may not be, please explain how you actually work with various fintechs from a contractual standpoint. So, for example, if a consumer secures a personal loan through a fintech such as Best Egg, which is one of your partners, what are the responsibilities that Best Egg takes on and what are the responsibilities that you all take on?
It's actually a really critical question and really critical to understand for so many reasons. So I'll give you some detail on this part. And actually, you picked a great example because Best Egg is one of our best partners. We actually offer a whole bunch of products with them, including personal loans, including loans for people who need it for their rent, and also auto loans as well. But this is a really critical point that you brought up. I think where many folks trip up is the fact that they think that because they're working with a bank or because they can rely on a bank or they can rely on another party, a third party, a middleware provider, or someone else. Every person in the value chain for the product that's offered has a responsibility for something, whether it be compliance, the technology, everyone has to have responsibility in that chain. You can't rely on a third party for compliance. Middleware, BaaS models who promise all this as a service, they put that entire product chain at risk. What the regulators expect is the bank who's originating a loan or effectuating a transaction has to be responsible for that transaction. There's also responsibilities, of course, on the platform, right? And they have to make sure they have the first line of defense. It really is a classic two lines of defense model, but everyone has to take part in that model for it to be successful. And that's a really, really critical thing to understand. You're seeing many, many regulatory actions right now that are just basically telling everyone, you cannot rely on somebody else. Bank is responsible, platform is responsible, everyone is responsible. You can't outsource that responsibility.
Okay. So if we think about, let's continue about Best Egg. So Best Egg is, as you know, a client of GDS. So they use our Modelica platform for underwriting, decisioning, account monitoring. So let's say that they want to introduce a new product. Are they, you know, limited to the products that you support? You know, what does that look like? I mean, and what is that cooperation between you and Best Egg to talk about a new product, for example?
So if they wanted to offer a new product, maybe rent would be a good example since they only started offering probably about a year ago, a little over a year ago. They would come to us with a proposal. We'd look at it together. We'd scope it out. We'd look at it from a credit standpoint, a compliance standpoint. We'd do diligence on the product, do diligence on any vendors that are involved. And it really is a collaborative effort. So no, there's no one party who actually controls the outcome. It's a total collaboration. Ultimately, the bank will be offering the product. So we have to make sure we understand it fully and are 100% comfortable with it. But it's a tremendously collaborative effort to get any new product launched.
Okay, so the actual contract for the loan is with Cross River Bank, correct?
Vis-a-vis the end customer, yes.
Yeah, to the end customer. Okay, so really, Best Egg is really once that account is booked, you're holding that note, but then Best Egg is providing the servicing of that loan, correct?
Most often, the platform is the one who's doing the end servicing. Some use third parties, but many do the servicing themselves.
Okay, so let's say that a partner of yours, like a Best Egg, is starting to see an uptick in delinquencies. They want to implement some new collection strategies. How involved do you all get in with them to understand, you know, where they're trying to head with these new policies that they put in or processes they put in?
The answer is very involved. Anyone who wants to propose a new process or a big change that would impact the end user, the customer, the bank has to do a deep review. And the reason really is because there's a lot of compliance implications. But in addition, in many cases, we're actually also an owner of loans for some of those platforms. And so we're actually impacted by those changes. And so on many levels, the bank has to do a full review and make sure that the relevant regulations are being adhered to, but also that we're comfortable with how it's being done from a market perspective.
Got it. Okay. So one of the things you touched on, obviously, is compliance. And that's very important in this relationship and how regulators view the relationship. So I was looking at your website and it referred to a compliance engine supported via your ARIX automated loan validation and funding software. Can you share a little more details on how that works? It sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, sure. I'm glad you asked because it's actually is one of the things that makes us the most unique in the space. Most of the folks that power some of these lending platforms do so by getting a daily Excel file, perhaps they're dropping a file via SFTP. They're sampling loans at the end of the day to make sure they adhere to the various credit criteria, perhaps some compliance. But I think what we built is an engine that allows for an upfront review prior to funding, prior to origination of every loan that comes through the bank system for both underwriting and compliance. So we have checks for many of the factors that are used in underwriting. We have checks for many of the regulations prior to a loan being issued. And then once the loan is reviewed for those aspects, the loan gets automatically funded via the bank's payment rails. So there's where that system of APIs comes into play. We can take a loan, review the package of loans submitted at the loan level, and then group those loans to create a file that allows for it to be funded automatically through our APIs.
Okay, got it. So what might be some of the things that could trigger a fail in that compliance process?
Sure. It could be a TILA violation where somebody wasn't calculated in the APR correctly, or it could be that it doesn't adhere to the criteria, the underwriting criteria that were previously agreed upon or predetermined. So there's a whole bunch of things that it could fail for a whole host of reasons, but I would say there's some that are more typical than others.
So, you mentioned some of the strengths of Cross River. Obviously, there are competitors in the space, WebBank, FinWise Bank, Celtic Bank are some of them. In what ways do you feel Cross River differentiates from your competition?
Yeah, there's a lot of good actors in the space, and that applies both to lending, it applies to payment, it applies to deposits, it applies to cars. But like I always say, I think what's unique about Cross River is that we have our own technology, so we're powered by technology. We also, as I just alluded to, we have a holistic product offering, meaning we compete with the folks you mentioned, mostly on the lending side, but many of those folks don't participate in the payment space, as an example, or some of them don't offer cards today, or some of them don't offer BaaS or deposit programs. We offer the entire gamut of product that a fintech could want in one place using our own core technology. At the same time, we are a company that still maintains a traditional presence. We offer commercial real estate loans. We offer regular retail deposits. We have a branch. We're not an ILC, as an example. And I think the last thing I would say, we're also a mission-driven company. We believe in the technology. If you look at our website, like we're a charitable company. We believe in what we're doing and enabling products to get to market to help the consumers, help the small businesses. We were a very large participant in the PPP program because we believe in the idea of helping folks who need help when they need it.
Right. Thanks for that. So, certainly throughout the history of the fintech bank partnership model, there's been a lot of legal challenges over the years that really at times put into question the future of the relationship, with some calling it nothing more than a rent-to-charter model. From a legal or compliance perspective, are there developments that Cross River is keeping an eye on? And also, could the results of the election impact on how things move forward with the bank partnership model?
Wow, Rich, it's a great question, but a loaded question. We could do a whole podcast on each one of those things you said, but I'll try to be succinct. If you look over the last few months, okay, the number of regulatory actions on fintech bank partnerships has never been at a higher point. There's an attack on the industry, I think, and you know, some are probably legitimate in terms of bad actors, but some of them actually are just attacking programs that don't even show violations. Right, and they're just attacking them because they think they don't like how the partnership is structured, perhaps. either way, there's no way to understand or fully grasp who's motivated by what. But what I can say is that there's definitely a lot of focus on fintech bank partnerships and ensuring they're done well in a compliant manner. But to be fair and to be totally transparent, the current environment clearly has not been supportive from a regulatory standpoint on fintech bank partnerships. But we have to. But all it means for us is we need to achieve a higher standard. So we don't look at it as a challenge. We look at it as, okay, that's just, we need to up our game. We need to make sure we're better than those standards they're applying. So we take it as a challenge. I do think, to your point, there is potentially some impact that elections can have. I mean, if you look back in 2016, the first thing that administration did when they came into power was they told the CFPB no more new regulations. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, that might be more extreme. However, there's definitely impact that you would see from a potential change, no matter who would win the election. At the same time, there's some active, you know, cases that are impacting some of the lending partnerships. Just yesterday, I don't know if you saw the announcement, but the AFC put out a release that they and other trade groups were challenging the Colorado laws, which were reducing interest rates in their state and outside banks, other state banks that were trying to offer loans in their state. So there's still a lot of challenges going on. It's not definitely not quiet. There's a lot of regulatory action, a lot of state action. And so a lot remains to be seen as far as how these things evolve and what the impact will be on the ultimate, you know, user of the product, which is the consumer and the small business. And I think that's what gets lost. Mm-hmm. All this noise, you know, is about, oh, do we like the model, not like the model? But who ultimately loses out? It's the end user, right? Because the availability, the product's not available, they can't use it.
Right. Exactly. Well, with the current change on late fees on credit cards, right? I mean, somewhere financial institutions are going to have to make up for that lost revenue, right? So
someone's always got to pay for it, right? If you don't paid for it here, it's paid for there. And so you can call it junk fees, you can call it whatever you want, but at the end of the day, like, you need to cover your costs, and you can't cover it with late fees, you cover it with somewhere else. You can't cover it with overdrafts, you cover it somewhere else.
Exactly. So kind of related to this, you know, a handful of fintechs have become banks, including the Lending Club and SoFi. Do you feel moving forward, we'll continue to see fintechs seeking out bank charters, or do you feel the partnership with banks may strengthen with companies like yourself, reducing the appetite for fintechs to move in this direction?
That's also a very interesting question in that I always wondered why some of these fintechs were applying for charters. I understand why it kind of takes out the middleman. They don't have to work with a bank. Maybe they save some costs. But I've always looked at it as the perfect partnership, assuming there's no third party or middleware involved. And the reason is because a fintech, a true fintech that's not in the bank system, they operate truly like a startup. And they have these sprints. They can achieve certain tight milestones. They have less scrutiny on everything they do. And it's sort of like the perfect partnership. The bank creates the compliant infrastructure and the support for their product, while a fintech is able to, you know, invent and to grow and to be thoughtful and build and create things that are unique because that they operate like a technology company. Right. So I think it's actually, you know, a kind of a perfect partnership, but I think some will just look at it like a cost savings. So I do think long-term, we'll probably see that the partnership model is a strong one, assuming that we can make sure that the folks who are in the space are good actors. But I do think there's actually some really strong support for the fact that folks should really focus on their core competencies. And the fintechs are good at building technology, acquiring customers, building UX. And the banks are really good at, you know, maintaining compliance and oversight and strong products.
Right. So let each focus on those areas of strength and let the partnership work. You mentioned, and we talked about a slew of products that you all offer. Are there any new products on the horizon that Cross River is evaluating at this point?
Yeah, I'll mention a couple. I mean, within the lending space, there's a couple of products that are really focused in the market right now. I think the EWA, obviously, is an important one, earned wage access or early wage access, depending on how you apply it. Also, flex rent, I mentioned before, the ability to, you know, depending on your pay schedule, have your rent paid ahead of when you actually get paid. And then I think on the payment side, all these new real-time payment rails are really growing fast. But two things that the bank is focused on outside of like the detailed or the sub-vertical, I think are new. And we've had a press release on one of them recently, and that's investment banking. I mentioned before that I think one of the things that separates Cross River is that we are holistic in our approach. And so we recently launched an investment banking group. And the idea is to provide support for debt, for equity, advisory, for some of these companies in the space. We're seeing now how challenging it can be to raise equity, certainly in different markets, different times of the market cycle. And so that kind of rounds out the offering. Now we can offer everything from, you know, origination services, payment services, you name the product, but also a lot of capital market support and now investment banking to kind of round out that offering. That's one. Another example is kind of an up and coming, and I'll kind of share it here first. But the bank is looking to offer a prepaid card, and that's a new offering in our card group. But I think it's really adjacent to what we offer already from a credit and debit standpoint, and there's a lot of reasons why we're doing it. But I think those are two new things that are kind of net new for the bank that I think are beyond the sub-vertical, and I think really will kind of further round out the offering we have.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for sharing that. We've certainly been living through interesting times with interest rates, with 11 increases since March of 2022. Sitting here today with the election less than 8 months away, you know, what are some predictions that Cross River might have as it relates to any rate reductions coming this year?
Well, predicting could be dangerous, but I'll do my best as an independent, not necessarily with Cross River. I think most people now are of the opinion, especially after the last meeting, that we'll see three rate reductions, probably about a total of 150 basis points in 2024. That will give some mild relief to some. I think for the long term, I think people should get used to the fact that it won't be zero ever again, or at least in the near future. And so what that does is that it keeps borrowing costs relatively higher than they have been historically, at least the last 15 years. I certainly worry about, you know, my children and where they're going to wind up living. And with housing prices so high and certainly rates higher than they've been, I think it's going to be challenging for people to afford homes. And that'll be a big focus over the next, call it, 10 years. How will we facilitate home ownership in the country? Yeah. But I think that we expect to see three cuts of a total of 150 basis points in total.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about home ownership. So there was an interesting article about the recent drop in FICO scores for the first time in a while. Not a significant drop, but a drop nonetheless. And they did some surveys, and you know, the younger generation, according to the surveys I read, really kind of are giving up on home ownership as a dream. And it talks about, you know, more focus on maybe affording a expensive car than putting aside the money and looking at what it would cost to buy a home. And certainly, you know, home ownership and the desire to buy a home and is important for people that are retiring, right, who are looking down the road to sell their homes. You need the people behind you that have the demand and the affordability to keep those prices where you're hoping from a retirement perspective, you're going to walk away and cash out, right? But if the populations behind us don't have the wherewithal to keep those prices where personally, like I would like them to be, right? That's going to have an impact on my financial future too. So it's a challenging balance, but I've always felt that our monetary policy should really not favor savers over investors or vice versa. You know, when you're elderly and the most you can get in a bank is, 0.01%, and you can't really be investing in equities, then that's a challenge when you're not really earning any additional income. But as you said, that, you know, rates were very, very low, and, maybe where they're going to settle is not unrealistic or unreasonable for, maybe 6% on a mortgage.
Yeah, no, it'll be a challenge. And I think, you know, it does provide, to your point, a meaning of a quote unquote forced savings for those for when they get to retirement. And I think that losing that would be challenging. But I think people who are disciplined, if they look at the cash flow and say, hey, rates are this high, prices are this high, I can save more on my own, that'd be great. The problem is, as we know, that's not the way of the American consumer. And so figuring out how we balance those two will be interesting going forward.
So certainly consumer debt's at an all-time high. More and more families are living paycheck to paycheck, and another reduction in consumer savings rates has occurred. It's easy to predict an acceleration in loan and card delinquencies, potential charge-offs. So I know we kind of actually touched on this a few minutes ago, but what do you see as a way of really reducing those delinquencies and working maybe more cooperatively with consumers that are delinquent on your book?
So the number of programs that are out there from servicers and fintechs alike that I think are allowing customers to choose the date they pay their loans back, perhaps giving them more flexibility in skipping a month, the payment holidays, the creativity that's come about from a servicing standpoint and helping customers who are challenged, I think is at an all-time high. We see a lot of cases where there's a lot of collaboration, a lot of outreach. You know, AI can detect some troubled consumers, so they're using technology to sort of identify those customers before they have trouble. So I think there's a lot of good resources and tools out there that are enabling fintechs and servicers for loans to reach out to customers to work with them. At the same time, I think there are also some new products that are enabling those customers to proactively, you know, manage their cash flow better. I mentioned a couple before, but I'll mention them again. One is, I mentioned, a FlexRent product. So there are folks who get paid at different times of the month. And so the fact that their rent is due on the first, that could be challenging for some. There are also programs which enable them to finance their security deposit if they're renting. So you don't have 3 months rent to give up front, right? So there are all these new products that sort of create cash flow and help them with these like short-term needs. Another one would be EWA, and the EWA has two components, right? There's earned wage access, where you've already earned money, but you're not being paid until the end of the month, or early wage access, where you're going to be earning money for sure in the next week or 2 weeks, but you need access to it today because you have an expense to deal with. And so I think that there's some really real good creativity for products that enable people to manage their cash flow a lot better. So I think that is being proactive and managing the ultimate challenge people have in paying their bills. And then on the back end, the tools that are being used to identify those folks, but also help them when they have times of need, I think is also a good result. And so I think that there's a lot of focus on making sure the customers stay current, enable them to stay current, and managing them through the tough times.
Great. Good. Well, thanks for that. So you mentioned payments several times. I saw your LinkedIn profile that you'll be moderating a session for the U.S. Faster Payments Council on March 28th, just a couple of days away, entitled "As Money Moves Faster, So Does Fraud. How Strategic Friction in the Process Can Mitigate Nefarious Activities." Can you share a little background on this U.S. Faster Payments Council and maybe touch on some of the highlights that you'll be covering in your session?
Yeah, so this is a great session, actually. And the Faster Payments Council has been a partner of ours for a while now. You know, they have a real vision, and their whole goal is to promote the faster movement of money. And that's been, you know, adopted by so many folks already. I mean, you started with things like Zelle, and now you have things like RTP and FedNow. So the proliferation of those products is becoming ubiquitous. What I'll be talking about, obviously, is more on the fraud side. And actually, it's the second session I'll be doing in a couple of weeks. I think it was last week I did a session on fraud as well. And we'll be doing this a panel next week while I'll be moderating. It'll actually be in Disney World. It's Thursday morning, so I'm leaving tomorrow for Disney. The focus is on fraud. I think the thing we have to understand is that with creativity, with new products, also comes new challenges. And so even though things like AI are helping us advance products forward, advance lending, advance payments, advance all these things forward, the same access we have to AI is the same access that folks who are trying to beat the system or gain the system or scan the system have. And so it's sort of a race of who uses it better and who uses it first. I think that most importantly, we'll talk about, you know, education, how to educate people on faster payments, how to educate people on identifying fraud, recognizing fraud, and what tools are out there to mitigate fraud. And so I think that we'll talk about the proliferation of the products, but we'll also talk about how to mitigate against the risk of fraud and what tools are out there to prevent it. And all I can say is tune in.
Great. Well, thanks for that. Well, we've touched on a lot of business things. Started out with a personal question, so why don't we end with a personal question? You mentioned you have children. As you think about the opportunity to influence what type of field that your children might focus on when they get into college, what advice might you give some rising high school seniors today about a career choice that might work well for them?
That's funny. So for personal, I have five children, but it's interesting that four of my children are between the ages of 19 and 15. And so I have four that are pretty closely grouped together, but I also have a six-year-old. And so I almost have two generations of children. But what I would say is that my oldest daughter actually is in college now. She's in a joint program for occupational therapy. We kind of encourage her to go into the medical field. Obviously, that's a growing field. Healthcare is a growing need in the country. At the same time, I actually had an opportunity recently. I'm a graduate of a school on Long Island, and they asked me to come speak to the seniors about, you know, what have I done with my career and sort of what would I recommend to them when they look for a profession. And I used one word, and I told a story, and I'll leave that for now, but I used the word impact. Everyone has a talent, and I think what you want to look for is where you can be impactful. And some folks can find themselves impactful. My wife's in medicine. She finds herself impactful in sort of helping, you know, heal others and take care of others. Now, I feel like I'm impactful in the banking world by enabling products to get to the end user. So it's identifying your core talents and skills and saying, where can I be impactful? I think, unfortunately, today, we're seeing a lot of folks looking to where they can make the most money and probably do it as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. But I think what you really want to have and what is really more fulfilling is where you can have impact. And if you think about impact and that's what your focus is, you'll wind up in the right place.
I agree with you. My daughter's been a nurse for many years, and I know she loves her job, and I tell her when you can love your job and make that impact, that's very rewarding and worth a lot of money, even if you're not getting the actual dollars. But anyway, thank you, Adam, for joining me today and providing some of the history for Cross River Bank, how you and your competitors work with fintechs, and some thoughts on what may lie ahead for the industry in 2024. Good luck with your session on payments on the 28th in Disney World. We hope you have all enjoyed this podcast. Please stay connected with GDS Link and the Lending Link to listen to future podcasts and catch up on the ones you've missed.
Thank you, Rich.
Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And be sure to leave us a review. Follow us on LinkedIn and connect with us on Twitter at GDSLink. That's at GDSLINK. Have a question for the show or have a specific topic you want us to cover? Hit the link in the description to drop us a note. Thank you for lending us part of your day. Make it a great one.